Good. I don't know how many of you have read this, but I received this, and I'll tell you something. It's one of the best pieces that I've read to tell us about our life in the submarines. And I thought I'd read it to the group because it's real interesting. It says, Once Upon a Time by Bob Dexter Armstrong. One of the benefits of growing old is a gift of time. Time is to look back and revisit your collective life experiences. For old smoke boat sailors, that means time to shuffle through the memories of pissing against the wind in faded soft dungarees, frayed rag hats, and zinc chromate spatted brogans. You can close your eyes and be transported back to the time when men wore acid-eaten uniforms, breathed air worse than the primate house at a poorly managed zoo, whittled mold and out of food of advanced age being reclaimed by the gods of purification and surgically carving off the stuff and eating it. You survived and built up an immunity that could handle leprosy, lockjaw, and cobra bites. We survived. Submarine duty was rough. Many of us hot-sacked. How many have hot-sacked? Well, you know what we're talking about. But you did it on nukes. You do it on nukes?
Not me. Not me.
I'll tell you something.
I'm a diesel electric man.
Well, I hot-sacked, and I'll tell you something. You were too poor to worry about it, and you'd get in and be soaking wet, and the next guy would get the sweat from you, so you didn't care. Many of us hot-sacked. For those who missed the life experience, hot-sacking was sharing sleeping arrangements, to put it in easily understood terms. A system required lads at the entry level of the undersea service profession to crawl onto a sweat-soaked flash pad just vacated by another bottom-feeding shipmate. Lads of today, modern, technically advanced undersea service would find it damn near impossible to imagine a day when lads who hadn't showered in weeks climbed a tier of racks, sharing socks aroma on par with three-day-old roadkill with his bunkmates. A time when rag hats, community shared blankets that looked like a hobo camp hand-me-downs. It was a time when the common denominator of the naval supply system was the cockroach. I remember several times with cockroaches, and believe me, they were something. With the longevity of Jack LaLanne. Cockroaches that could inflict claw-hammered blows and could reach rotary entry size. In the late 50s, the submarines built in the twilight years of World War II were rapidly approaching the advanced age comatose state. The Navy quit making many of the replacement parts for these seagoing antiques, so we cannibalized those boats in line heading to the scrapyard. It was like harvesting organs from a dead Rockette to keep the chorus line going. After decommissioning, the old boats would have electricians and machinists crawling all over them with shopping lists and wrenches. Memory is a wonderful God-given gift. There were sunrises and sunsets, rolling seas, visit to exotic places, and ladies with loose panty elastic and no AIDS. They were consumable combustibles on par with the liquids that propelled hardware to the outer space. It was a time when the world population loved the American submarine. Boat sailors in port managed good times, hell-raising and calling in the night shift of the local brewery. It was a time when the United States Navy had no recruitment problems, paid no incentive motor, and had to kiss the no butts to entice grown men into accepting their manly obligation to their nations. Men signed up for the undersea service motivated by patriotic obligation, a sense of history and adventure, and to follow the gallant submariners who rowed the boats against the Japanese Empire. We wanted to wear the distinctive insignia universally recognized as the symbol of the most successful and demanding submarine service on Earth. We were proud. We had a right to be. We were accepted as a downline fraternity brothers of a courageous man who put Hirohito's monkey band all over the floor of the Pacific. We rode their boats, ate their mess tables, slept in their bunks, and plugged their ever-increasing legs in the houses that left us. We patted the same bar maids' butts that they had patted when they were far younger and half as wide. We carved our boats' names on and hull numbers on gin tables in places that would give a Methodist minister cardiac arrest. We danced with the devil's mistress and all her naughty daughters. We were young, testosterone-driven American bluejackets, let's face it. Every girl in every port established around the globe both recognized and appreciated the meaning of a pair of dolphins over a jumper pocket. Many of these ladies were willing to share smiles and body warmth with the members of the American Undersea Service. It was true in Australia, I'll tell you that. Brings back memories. It's a time when the snapping of the American colors in the ports of the world stood for liberation from tyranny, and the American sailor in his distinctive uniform and happy-go-lucky manner stood for John Wayne's principles and a universally recognized sense of decency, high ideals, and uncompromised values. It was every sense of the term, a great time to be an American sailor. There were few prohibitions. They were looked upon as simply unnecessary. It was a time when family values were taught at family dinner tables, at schools, the nation's playing fields, scout troops, Sunday school, and other institutions of worship. We were good people and we knew it. We plowed the world's oceans, guarding her sea lanes and making her secure for the traffic of international commerce. But at 18, let's face it, we never thought much about the noble aspect of what we were doing. Crews looked forward to the next Liberty port, the next run, home port visits, what the boat was having for evening chow, the evening movie after chow, or which barmaids were working at Bell's that evening. We were young, invincible, and had our whole lives ahead of us. Without being aware of it, we were learning leadership, acceptance of responsibility, and teamwork in the finest classroom in the world, a United States submarine. It was a simple time. Lack of complexity left us with all the clean-cut objectives, and bad guys were clearly defined. We knew who they were and where they were, and that we had the means, will, and ability to send them off to hell in a fiery package deal. We were the good guys and literally wore white hats. What we lacked in crew comfort, technology, advancements, and publicity are made up for the continuity, stability, and love of our boats and squadrons. We were a band of brothers and have remained so far over half a century. Since we were not riding what the present-day submarine would call true submersibles, we got sunrises and sunsets at sea. The sting of the wind blowing salt water on our face, the roll and pitch of heavy weather swells, and the screech of seabirds. I can't imagine sea dirty devoid of contact with these wonders. To me, they're a very real part of being a true mariner. I'm glad I served in the era of signal lights, flag messaging, navigation calculations, marines manning the gates, locker clubs, working girls, hitchhiking in uniform. Quartermasters, torpedomen and gunner's mates, sea store smokes, hot sacking, hydraulic oil-laced coffee, lousy mid-rat, jackassing fish from the skirts into the tubes, and one or two-way trash dumping turned up at morning quarters wearing a Mexican sombrero and Jesus sandals. When every E3 in the subforce knew what paint scrapers, chipping hammers, and wire brushes were for. When JGs with a pencil were the most dangerous thing in the Navy. When the Navy mobile canteen truck was called the Roach Coach and the Sol Gidunk and Bogey Bait. When Breakfast of Champions was a pitcher of Blue Ribbon, four Slim Jims, a pack of beer nuts, a hard-boiled egg, and a game of eight ball. It was a time when if you saw a boat sailor with more than four ship patches on his foul-weather jacket, he was at least 50 years old and a lifer. A time when skippers wore hydraulic oil-stained steaming hats and carried a wad of binocular wipes in their shirt pockets. In those days, old Barnacle and Crusted Chiefs had more body fat than Hell's Angels smoking big, fat, lousy-smelling cigars or chewed plugs that came with a sewer digger's vocabulary. It was a time when heterosexuals got married to members of the opposite sex or patronized working girls and non-heterosexual went to Air Force or would Peace Corps. It's a good time for the, some of us, the boat time we would ever have. There was a certain satisfaction to be found in serving one country's without the nature of your daily loving, having to promise you enlistment bonuses, big whooping education benefits, feather beds, short duty, or an A school with a sauna and a color TV. It was a time when if you told a cook you didn't eat Spam or cream chip beef, everybody laughed and you went away hungry. And if you custom S cook, you could find toenail clippings in your salad. That's the truth. Best friend I had on the thresher was the belly robber, and I always made, because I used to make out the watch list, and I'd go and see him. I said, "What watch you want to go on, Cecil?" And so when I would ask him for special things, he always made it for me. So I never worried about that. There was a point when we drove a line through our names on the watch quarter and station bill, towed our shipmates we sent them in half, in hell, shook hands with the cop, paid back the slush friend, told the skippers goodbye, and picked up a dispersing check in your DD-214. We went up on the Hampton Boulevard, bought a couple of rounds at Bell's, kissed the barmaids, gave Thelma a big hug, then went out to spend the rest of our lives wishing we could hear Single Up the Lights just one more time. And I thought this was really great, because you read this and it brings back memories that you never forget. And I'm talking about 60, 65 years ago. It just happened like it was yesterday. Well, I thought you'd be interested.
Thank you very much, John.
You want to have this for the...
I've already got it. Thank you.
That's right. You said it to me.